Contracts, salary caps. Why do our favorite teams make some of the moves they do? It's usually the money. It's time for the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.
Hey, welcome back, boys and girls. Got another edition for you, the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt. We just had the NFL draft. Number one pick in the draft, Baker Mayfield. I saw that his agent was not one of the bigger agents, and certainly someone you wouldn't think the number one pick would go with. You think of the big firms that are getting all the top quarterbacks. Well, Baker went with a small-time agent named Jack Mills. When I say small-time, I certainly don't mean not well-known. He's been in the business 40-something years, had the Heisman Trophy winner at Oklahoma 40-something years ago, I think 48 years ago in Steve Owens, and now has the one in 2017 in Baker Mayfield. Tom Mills talks about how he got Baker Mayfield. It's an amazing story you'll hear. At a restaurant in L.A., just for the first time, even before dinner was ordered, he had him as a client. Talks about Baker's experience with other agents. Talks about how teams were just sort of enamored with him going into the draft. He felt like the Broncos would take him at 5, the Jets would take him at 3, and of course the Browns, even though he didn't know. And then listen for a surprise team that was trying to get into number 2. You will be shocked, perhaps, as to which team that was. So enjoy it ahead, a long-form podcast all about the representation of Baker Mayfield, the industry, the teams getting in position to draft him, including that surprise team. Enjoy this podcast with veteran agent, an agent to Baker Mayfield, Jack Mills.
You know, the agent business is seems to be dominated these days, especially at the top of the draft, by CAAs and Athletes First and LaGuardia, and they're getting 10, 20 clients in the draft. Well, top of the draft is Jack Mills with Baker Mayfield. Jack, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
You know, you and I have known each other a long time. When I entered the agent business, 1986, and you were up and running for quite a while, weren't you?
Yeah, I had... I hate to admit it, but I was getting started in the late 60s.
Wow.
I came to Boulder in 65 and worked for a year with Eddie Crowder at the University of Colorado. That's how I got to Boulder. And then I went into law practice in 66, and I believe 67 was the first time I had a couple of NFL players.
I saw something where you had Steve Owens, who won the Heisman in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid we're going to talk about named Mayfield won it in 2017. My math tells me that's 48 years.
Yes. Yeah, that 48-year gap there between Oklahoma Heisman winners. I had a couple of others in the meantime, but I had George Rogers and Rashan Salaam. But... yeah, for OU, it took me 48 years to get another one.
So tell us, I mean, I want to get to Mayfield, but tell us, so many people want to be agents, and I, you know, sometimes I try to disabuse them of that notion that so many people ask me about it. But the sustainability of your practice is amazing. Just how in this sort of cutthroat world of agencies and without having a big operation, how have you stayed consistent, stayed relevant, stayed in the business?
Well, it hasn't been easy. I'd say we did it the hard way. And in all honesty, Andrew, I probably wouldn't still be in it if my son Tom wasn't working with me, because I doubt if I could get out there and get enough players to make it worthwhile or want to, you know, because it's a difficult business, and it's hard to explain it because, you know, at one point in the prime time of my career, I had 72 guys by myself.
Mm.
And today, and of course, guys weren't making all that much money then. When I had the number ones in 1970, which was when Steve Owens was drafted, they all started at $25,000 salary. So, you know, you couldn't make a living at it then. But I just kept my law practice going right along with trying to represent players. I never wanted to get totally dependent on it. But then for about the last 20 years, I would say, that's all we've done. And I had a golfer named Hale Irwin that became became one of the all-time greats. And he was a very, whereas your football players are going to last from about 5 to 10 years, if you're lucky, you might get an offensive lineman that will go, you know, 13 or 14. But Hale was the one client that was there for, you know, for almost the entire time. He's still playing some on the senior tour, on the Champions Tour, but he's not making any money to speak of now. But yeah, we just kind of kept it small, and you know, you've been in the business, so
right.
You know, you've got to keep your overhead under control. It can get away from you pretty fast if you start spending too much money chasing around and you know, recruiting players and traveling and paying for this and that. It can get away from you pretty quickly. So we just tried to really keep our overhead under control and not get too far out with our commitments. And we had, you know, we had years where we'd have some good players and years we'd have nobody. So it's hard to make it level out over a period of time.
Tell me and our listeners how you did get in the business. You mentioned you're a lawyer, and back in the day when we were talking about agency, wasn't a, you know, there weren't a lot of agents. There weren't a lot of people getting in this business, and a lot of people trying to get in this business like there are now.
Yeah, way back when I got started, there was no way to get to gain entry, really.
Yeah.
I mean, today, as you know, the major sports unions control the business of the agents in those respective team sports. Back then, there was no control by the union, and so you just had to say, "Hey, you're going to be a pro. I'd like to represent you." And there was no certification process or anything. But when I came to Colorado, like I said, I worked for Eddie Crowder, who was the head football coach. I'd gone to law school. I had been in the military for 2 years. Then Crowder hired me to come here, and just as part of my law practice, I decided it'd be kind of fun to do this. And so I got started. Not like you said, very few people were doing it. For one, it was hard to figure out how to do it, and two, there was no money really to be made because of what the players were making. And so I just gradually kept it going as part of my law practice over the years, and you know, it got to where you could actually make a living at it if you got enough good players. But and you've been in the business, so you know it's mainly about recruiting. You know, young people ask me all the time about how to do it, and I tell them, you know, to get certified by the union of the sport that they think they want to work in, and then see if they can get some clients. And if they can get some clients, they can make it. If they can't, they won't. It's kind of simple that it's the lifeblood of the system. It's sort of like college recruiting. If you can recruit, you can probably be a successful coach. If you can't recruit, well, you probably won't be doing it very long.
Yeah, it is the lifeblood of the business. And, you know, speaking of that, I think people can tell by your kind of, if you'll excuse me for saying, kind of homespun accent, that
that's all right.
That's part okay. of that probably is part of your sell and recruiting, and part of the pitch that you have is a very family oriented. You talk about Tom, your son, I know well, being with you. And you talk about a smaller operation. I'm sure the bigger operations sell their clout and their contacts and all their big names. So take us inside, not necessarily for Baker, but in terms of what your pitch is when you recruit, and as we know, that the business is getting more consolidated all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first thing to find out is you need to talk a little bit about just the need for representation in the National Football League. Now, as you know, the rookie contracts are quite different from when you were doing them as a player rep and then for the Packers. There's very little to negotiate for these rookies. So just being upfront and honest, you need to tell people that you're not going to make a big difference in what they get. Once they get drafted, it's going to be pretty well determined. But I think like the Mayfields, they were, the dad is a successful businessman. They're pretty knowledgeable people. I told them right up front that what we could do or couldn't do, and just let them decide. There wasn't much in that particular situation. And but the very first thing I asked them, and this was the key question, was, are you interested in a big agency if you want to be to have representation? And he right off the bat said, we do not want a big agency.
Why not?
They just said they wanted a more personal touch. They just didn't want to be one of, you know, 100 or, you know, 50 to 100 guys. And so that right away kept us in the game. And it's the same with any of these people. And you know, some people want, they want to know, you know, how much you're going to pay me, what kind of stipend I'm going to get, mm-hmm. what kind of training are you going to provide for
right.
me?
Videos,
you know, can
movies.
You loan me money? Can
right.
you do this? Some people now, and you've probably heard this term, some people offer what they call marketing guarantees,
right.
where they're fronting a lot of money to these top players, and that's over our head. We don't get into that. You know, if they're marketable, they're going to get their marketing. If they're not, they're not. And so, and in football, it's pretty speculative what a player is going to get marketing wise, unless he is maybe, you know, top of the first round or something.
Right.
So we just try to keep it simple and say, this is what we can do. We're not going to make a huge difference in your draft. I do think that who a player selects to represent him makes a statement about himself.
Right.
And so I think that in some ways it can be positive if you line up with certain people, and I think it can be a negative if you line up with some that aren't that well regarded in the league.
And
so I think it's important, you know, who you associate with.
I will echo that, Jack. Certainly when I, you know, when we had all these agents representing Packers, it was so clear to me that the agent represented the player as much as the player represented the agent. And I would look mm-hmm. at some players and then look up the agent. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. In a
yeah.
good or bad or indifferent way, I just say, okay, yeah, I can see those two being together. So you're right. It really is a matchup. And on Baker, let's go to that. When you got the meeting, first of all, you know, a top pick, and at that point I'm sure no one knew if it was going to be 1 or 5 or 10 or 15, but the barriers to entry for those meetings are tough. It seems like a lot of those guys just meet with the ones I mentioned, the CAAs or Athletes First.
Right.
And
right.
So tell us how you even got to the point where you're in the game with someone like Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, well, I'm a University of Oklahoma graduate, and and I've had a number of players there, and two in particular were acquainted with the Mayfield family. Steve Owens, who was a Heisman Trophy winner mm-hmm. back in 1969, and a first round pick in 70, and his younger brother Tinker Owens was also a client, and Tinker had gotten to be really good friends with the dad through various contacts that they had. They both live in Norman and are around the program quite a bit. And then we had another client named Blake Bell, who was a quarterback at OU and was converted to a tight end. He's now on the roster with the Minnesota Vikings. But he was a big quarterback there and a real good friend of Baker's, and they were the ones that really kind of set the stage for us, just based on saying, hey, you guys should talk to Jack and Tom if you're going to get serious about an agent. And so at one point there, and Tinker set up a phone call for me with the dad, and so the dad and I started having, we might have had 3 or 4 phone conversations during the season, and they put everything on hold. They were not, to my knowledge, they were not having any meetings with agents during the season. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, we prefer it that way. We really don't want to bother these guys during the season.
Right.
We might see them before the season, but we did not. You're not going to believe this one, Andrew, but we did not meet Baker until 2 weeks after the Rose Bowl, where they lost the game to Georgia. We, in fact, frankly, the dad said, well, you guys probably ought to get out there to meet Baker. He'd stayed in California after the Rose Bowl and did his training out there. He was already lined up with a personal trainer before we ever met him. But Tom and I went out there, went to dinner, and
this is mid-January?
This is January 15th.
Okay.
And we're sitting there at the table, and I just said, hey, Baker, where does this thing stand? I mean, what do we need to do to get this thing done if you're interested in doing it? He said, well, I'm ready to sign.
So based on the one dinner? Now, who was at this dinner?
One dinner.
Just the three?
Never seen him before. Never talked to him. Never had a phone conversation. We had a phone conversation to set up where we were going to meet for dinner. That was the first time we'd ever even talked to him.
You tell us where that is?
What's that?
Tell us what restaurant that was?
Yeah. It was called the Big Red O. It was a Mexican restaurant in West Hollywood.
Big Red O, that makes sense.
I mean, normally you think, well, we're going to go to the Capitol Grill or something. You know,
yeah,
we're going to pick some fancy place where we're going to spend $300 or $400 having dinner. And he picked this restaurant, Mexican restaurant, and it was a very good restaurant, but it wasn't some high end place. So I think you're getting the picture here. We were pretty darn lucky, but it was just straightforward. There was no, what are you going to do for me? That is like
getting to know each other.
Most of my friends are signed. I want to get this over with.
So wait, you meet with the number one pick in the draft at the Big Red O. And sort of at the end of the meal, you say,
we met, before we even got dinner, we just sat down and Tom had gone to the bathroom and that's when I said, well, what do we need to do here? And he said, well, I'm ready to sign.
He just felt comfortable. He just felt
It was like my dad likes you and Tinker and Steve like you and Blake Bell likes you. And I'm, I don't need to mess around with this.
you're pre-qualified.
Let's do it. So Tom came back and we signed and then we got some dinner.
Now, did he meet other agents at all?
I don't know if he actually met anybody. There's a thing online, you can look at it if you want to. It's called behindbaker.com, and they had this film production company from Hollywood wanted to do this documentary, and so they put on this thing. And I'm not telling you anything you can't see online, but online, it shows he's having a phone conversation with Bus Cook, who I know
Bus well.
He's represented a lot of quarterbacks and represented Brett Favre. And Bus asked him, when did Bob Stoops start recruiting you? And the story of what happened is that Bob Stoops didn't even know that Baker had enrolled at OU. He transferred from Texas Tech, where he had walked on, and they didn't give him a scholarship, so he left.
Right.
And he went to OU and enrolled, and then he went into Bob Stoops' office and said, hey, I just transferred to OU. Can I come out for football? and so he said, I think he kind of hung up on Bus and said, if he didn't know that I wasn't recruited, I don't need to talk to him.
Yeah, it was interesting because speaking of Bus, he did that that recreation of the Brett Favre photo.
Yeah,
on Twitter the other day. Well, the day of the draft. Yeah,
it was. I mean, we didn't know they were doing that, but it was pretty clever.
It was.
His marketing people came up with that, and they're a young couple, just a couple of young people that have really worked hard and done. They've done real well. We've been happy to work with them, but they were on site before we were. They'd already hooked up with him before we got involved.
So you're purely contract football. He's got his marketing side, and he had that, as you said, all before you got involved.
Yeah, that's all. We're just doing the contract side of it.
Now, when you talk to him about what you did and contract, you talk about exactly what everyone knows, what you and I just talked about, that there's not a lot to be done on the contract because of the CBA pre-negotiating this. And, I mean, does he ask about fees for that? I mean, how deep did you get into the contract negotiation?
Well, what we did, we showed him, we had printed up a list of last year's first round signings.
Right.
And we didn't have the names on it. We just had the amounts 1 through 32.
Right.
And the total amount and the amount of the guarantee. And we just showed him how the system worked in that respect, that it was going to be slotted and everybody is going to make a little bit less than the guy in front of him. And so, you know, we showed him that, and he drew a line right there. He drew a line at 5, and he said, "I'm not going below this line." And we said, "Fine," because that was the Broncos, and we knew the Broncos liked him. And I think they would have drafted him if he'd have been available.
This was at the dinner back in January, he said that.
This is at the dinner.
Wow.
Yeah, this is at the dinner. We just showed him that. We said, you know, this is what happens is, you know, and this year's numbers are going to be a little bit higher than last year's numbers. We don't know how much, but they're going to be a little bit higher. And yeah, we talked a little bit about fee, but we just told him that you know, what most people were doing now and what you've the business. I mean, we don't know what other guys are signing for. We know, we hear stories, but the percentages, you know, we can charge up to 3% under the NFLPA's guidelines or rules, but nobody's, to my knowledge, is getting 3%.
Right.
The way the contracts are structured now.
Right.
So you know, we did not get 3%. We didn't even ask for 3%.
Right.
But we're not doing it for free. Another player we talked to said something like, "Well, I heard you were doing Mayfields for free." And we said, "No, we're not." I said, "We may have done some for free, but it wasn't by design." It was because we didn't get paid.
Right. Yeah, that's another part of the agent business that I don't miss is the collection part.
Right. Yeah.
So at that time, I think if you could take us sort of inside going from wherever he was rated in that day in January where he said he's not going below 5 to coming up to the Browns, did you have a sense then, you know, when you're retained, you start talking to teams before we even get to Dorsey and the Browns that, you know, you've got a guy that's going to go high. You've got a guy that if things break right, could be top five, but maybe not, and all those kind of things.
Yeah, we did. You know, we went down to the Senior Bowl and the Broncos were coaching him down there and they had specifically asked for him to be on their team. And he wasn't all that excited about playing, but he had committed to play. And so, really, Andrew, what they told him, come on down, you don't have to play in the game, but we want you there for the practices. And then when it came time for the game, well, they put pressure on him to at least do 2 or 3 series, which he agreed to do, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, we don't want to look bad because, you know, people think you're the Heisman Trophy winner and people think you're going to be playing and everything. But we talked a lot to the scouts and the coaches down there, and we talked to we know the Bronco guys real well, and we were talking to Matt Russell and Elway, and we've talked some to Vance Joseph, the coach, and they all really liked him. So we felt pretty good about the Broncos. They were probably going to take a quarterback. Then, as you know, later they signed Case Keenum, and so that pretty well, at least what we think, he'll be their starter this year. So they weren't looking for somebody. And actually, ideally, and I'm sure you'll agree, it's not exactly the greatest thing for a guy to have to start his rookie year anyway.
Right.
But, you know, he'll probably want to, just knowing him, but we weren't necessarily looking for somebody to, you know, he'll be starting his rookie year. But then as teams, then they had the pro day, and then, you know, he had some private workouts, and we just started, and we were getting some strong feedback on his intelligence. People were, when they were doing the whiteboard with him, and when they were giving him some, not the Wonderlic, but some other intelligence tests, they were coming back, wow, man, this guy is sharp. And so, and people were really just raving about the interviews they had with him. So we're starting to think, wow, maybe, you know, maybe this is going to be up there in that top five. And then we pretty much, after the Jets worked him out, he told us, he said, I don't know what people usually tell players, but he said, man, if they're being straight with me, they act like they're going to draft me.
The Jets. I mean,
the Jets. And we told him, we said, well, yeah, don't. You know, we hear a lot of things.
Right.
Heard a lot of things. And I said, don't. these coaches sometimes don't know what they're going to do in the draft. They may want you, but they may not get you. But when he visited the Jets, they pretty much said, you're our guy if you're there.
Right.
And but the Browns never did tip their hand, ever.
What did they say to him after meeting with him?
Well, they didn't say you're our guy. They I don't know what they said, but they liked him, and Darcy never contacted us, and we've known John for a long time, you know, since he was back when he was with the Packers way back, being a scout. And he just never tipped his hand, and even until the day of the draft. And I know Adam Schefter came out, I think it was Friday before the weekend, said something like, don't be surprised if the Browns take him number one. That's a story we're picking up on. But nobody ever told us anything.
And
we didn't know until John called during their time on the clock in the first round that he was actually the guy.
Really?
Usually the first pick, they let you know a little something ahead of time. In the old days, as you know, people were worrying about signing the guy.
Yeah.
You could even have an agreement before that. I had George Rogers, when I had George, New Orleans was calling me all the time because they were trying to decide between him and Lawrence Taylor.
Right.
And George went first and Lawrence went second. And so we really can't say that we had the inside word that it was going to happen. But I just think the momentum was building, and for some reason, I don't know if it's leadership or confidence, which he's got a lot of both.
Mm-hmm.
Every time he had an interview, it was like, wow, man. Even when he was here in Denver, he visited, I think, he had seven visits, and the stuff we got back, we didn't ever talk to the Broncos after that, but we talked to their one of their media guys, and he just said, they're sold. They said that interview really sold them. And so whatever he was saying, it was going over really, really well.
So day of the draft, are you guys expecting the Jets at 3? Is that where you're looking?
We knew that was the bottom line.
Hmm.
We had another team, which is going to surprise you. Another team had said, you may get a big surprise on draft day at number 2 if he's available. And it was the Patriots.
Wow. To get up to number 2?
And we thought, yeah. They had traded, you know, they had 23 and they had 31 and they had 2 seconds. And I don't know. We thought, boy, that's going to be a heck of a move to get up that high from where they are.
Right.
And of course, he wasn't available, so nothing. We never knew if that was a reality or not.
Giants show any interest, or they were definitely not taking quarterback.
He visited them. Yeah. He visited them, but we never thought they were going to take a quarterback. We thought they were going to trade down.
Yeah.
We kept hearing Buffalo was going to try to trade into their pick.
Right.
I don't know if you heard that, because we knew they wanted a quarterback.
Right. They were coming up for somebody. I heard it was Josh Allen, but maybe they like Baker too.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. That was the other thing, because, you know, the Rosen and Allen were being talked about so much in the top three or four, or top two or three, that it was still hard to figure if Baker was one or two. It was still hard to determine that.
Really an amazing story that, as you talked about, when he met Stoops, he walked on two programs.
Yeah. Right?
As a walk-on.
Yeah.
And he's the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Heisman Trophy.
It's like, what was Texas Tech thinking? Not to give him a scholarship.
Right.
I mean, it's like, how does that make them look? Because I think he started as a freshman, and then I think he got hurt, and somebody else came in after he got hurt. And then he said, I'm out of here.
Yeah, I'm out. Well, let me ask you this. When you hear from the Jets and you hear from the Broncos people or through the media guy and of course, the Browns and maybe others, I know it's, you know, it's hard for you to be unbiased as his agent, but what is it? I mean, is it obviously on field and off field combined, but it seems like people think that Baker has that it, you know, that two-letter word, it. And can you describe it? Can you tell me what you're hearing about him? What is that thing that makes him attractive to teams?
Well, that word was used to me by Vance Joseph when he was coaching him in the Senior Bowl. Mm-hmm. I was talking to him in the hotel lobby, and, I mean, he'd been there for, what, two practices, I think.
Right.
And Vance was using that. He's got it, Jack. He said he's got it. It's what we're looking for. I heard it from the coaches at OU, and I heard it from a couple of players. They just said he's special. You know, he really is a leader. And I don't know. I can't tell you that we have seen it just based on he's been great for us to work with. And, you know, we had to overcome some of the comparisons to Johnny Manziel and all that kind of stuff. And we got that, based on our knowledge of him, that was like the furthest thing from our mind that people should be thinking.
Right.
It was like, if you're worried about that, you're worried about the wrong thing. You're going to be real disappointed if that is what caused you to judge him a certain way. But I just think it's a confidence. I don't know. He's done it everywhere he's been. He's done it. You know, people worry about his height, and yet you don't see that it's ever been an issue up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And it hadn't been with a couple of other guys in the league like Wilson and Drew Brees. But you know how scouts get these artificial measurement things in their mind that you have to comply to. But I don't know. I can't really say that we would have known just based on our relationship with him. And you know, we haven't been with him all that much because from January the 15th, we were with him at the Senior Bowl. And we saw him briefly at the Combine, but he was doing interviews, it seemed like, the whole time at the Combine that he wasn't working out. And then we were down there for the draft. We haven't really spent that much just social time with him where we just were just passing the time of day. There's been almost none of that.
So the draft, he was in Norman?
He was at his home in Austin, Texas.
In Austin, right. And you were there.
We were there. we were there. He didn't want to go to the draft.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be fun.
The league pressure you?
Such a big show.
The league pressure you to sell that a little harder?
They talked to the marketing people. They didn't talk to us.
Okay.
I was surprised they didn't talk to us, but I didn't care. But there were monetary considerations about could have made some appearances for money there.
Yeah.
But he just said, you know, I just want to be home. I want to be with friends, my coaches, my family. And there were probably 40 people there at their house.
And he did not know. He did not know until that call.
Did not know until
on the clock.
Call.
Wow.
Did not know until that phone call.
None of you.
We were just standing there, you know, an hour before the draft started, still speculating about who we heard from, who we didn't hear from, and just trying to read the signals. But I think John Dorsey was, and again, I still haven't talked to him, but I think he was trying to keep everything in suspense until the last minute just to see what people were going to offer him for that pick. And because, you know, from being on the management side, everything's determined by what's left if you're going to trade up or trade down, depending on what you thought you were going to be able to do.
Right.
And so I think he just wanted to keep everybody guessing because there was so much focus on those four guys, those four quarterbacks.
Right.
There's just so much. And, like, you know, he's going to take a quarterback one and he's going to get Barkley at four. Because they thought, well, the next two guys are going to be quarterbacks.
Right.
And the Giants messed that up, you know.
Right.
And then Denver, I don't think Denver thought they were going to get this guy that they got. I think that the Browns surprised everybody with the fourth pick.
Sure, of course.
Don't you?
Yeah, I mean, everyone thought Chubb would go there. If not, Barkley was gone, and then Denver would take a quarterback. But that changed. And I applaud Denver for not panicking on a quarterback.
They
signed Keenum for all that money, and they got the number one from a couple of years ago in Lynch.
But he's still there, and so we'll see.
So going forward, like we've talked about a couple of times, it's pre-negotiated roughly $32 million over the next 4 years, fully guaranteed.
Yeah, we're hearing like 33, maybe, with 22 in bonus, something along those lines.
So, what can you do? Tell us what can you do on that deal.
Well,
where can you make a difference?
I'm not sure. We're going to talk to the union, of course, and see, you know, because they want you to clear everything with them anyway, but. We want to see if there's any special thing that we can do, because I don't want to miss, you know, on something we should have done. I guess you may argue about how the money is going to be paid.
Right. Sure.
Remember a couple of years ago, Bosa held out in San Diego.
Right. Because it was
apparently
bonus.
They were arguing about offset language.
Right.
Like the contract's guaranteed. If you get cut and somebody else picks you up, are you going to have to offset?
Right.
Well, I thought, are you really holding out for that? I mean, this guy is not going to be cut. So how important is that language? But maybe that's something that they encourage you to work on.
Yeah, it's precedent. You know, precedent on both sides.
No offset.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
And the teams want to protect that for their next guy and for their veterans.
Right.
And the union and the agents want to get it so they can sell it to their next crop.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But
yeah.
The other thing, and then you bring up Bosa, he was arguing about two things. One was the offset. The other was the payout of the bonus.
Yeah, and when he got paid.
Yeah, I don't know how the Browns are going to feel about a lot of deferrals, and that's something you can work on, I'm sure.
Yeah, and That again, that's probably one of the things that will be discussed.
Yeah.
That'll be maybe, you know, argued about, or I just don't know what their cash situation is like, or how they want to pay it out, or, you know, what's the best. It to me, it's not a big deal if you don't get the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right now, you know, some they want to wait. You know how that goes. They want to the next year when their first installment of their TV money comes in. That
right.
Kind of thing.
Right.
So we'll see when we get there. We haven't had any inkling of anything at this point.
One last thing is, since January 15th, have you had any worry? Because I know personally how cutthroat this business is, mm-hmm. about the bigger firms still nipping at his heels, still trying to recruit him. And
yeah.
any concern about that or inkling of that?
You always think about that. I agree with you. Obviously, you're always looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
These people were so straight about everything they did. I did not worry about them changing their mind. Now, that doesn't mean somebody wouldn't have tried it, but I just think the dad, for example, is just he's a good businessman, and I know he left it up to Baker, but I just thought anybody that had really spent any time with him would have thought it was a waste of time, and maybe we shouldn't try this. But I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I never did doubt them. You know, for obviously we all have to sign that agreement now, or it's not recognized by anybody. But so many of the early years when I was in the business, I never had anything in writing.
Yeah.
And I never got burned, and I probably should have, but I didn't. But now with so many agents, of course, in the early days, there were so few agents. Now, you and I both know who we'd be talking about. There's always people trying to steal your veteran clients.
Right.
And so I will always be alert for that and be, you know, making sure that he's happy with what we're doing. But that was something that I don't blame you for asking that question, because it happened so quick, and he was just so, let's do it. It was like, wow, is he, I mean, he just met us tonight.
That's amazing. Gonna,
you know? and the same thing happened with me. I don't know if you want to hear this, but
yeah.
Same thing happened to me with Eric Dickerson.
Yeah.
Back when I got a call from Billy Kilmer and Jake Scott, and they were both on the Redskins.
Right.
At that time, Jake had gone from Miami to the Redskins. And they said, would you want to represent Eric Dickerson? And I said, well, yeah, but what's the deal? This was like, you know, this was after the season. And they said, no, he said, we know this guy in Dallas, that George Owen, that Eric really relies on, and it's his advisor and all that. And so I go to Dallas. This guy picks me up at the airport. We go to the Bentry Country Club for lunch, and I'd seen Eric for maybe 30 minutes to an hour. And George looked over at Eric and said, what do you think, Eric? Mr. Mills look okay? He said, yeah, it looks good to me. Looks fine, Mr. Owen. And that was it. And I mean, you know, you're in the business. You know how unusual that is.
Oh, my God.
And so, and it was nice, but it was just like, wow, is this happening?
Right.
Because you can imagine all the guys that had been trying to sign him, they had offered him everything under the sun. And Eric, he was great. I didn't retain him for his whole career, unfortunately, but I went to his Hall of Fame induction, and he invited me to that, and we're good friends today. But that was just, you know, one of those otherworldly experiences
yeah.
that you may have in this business sometimes.
Yeah, and as you know, I started my career working for super agent, basketball agent, David Falk. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we represented John Thompson down the road in Washington, D.C. And I said, you're talking about Eric, same situation. Every now and then, you know, a Patrick Ewing or Alonzo Mourning or Allen Iverson would show up at the office and we'd say, can we help you? And they'd say, well, coach said to come over and sign some papers. And I'm like, you mean like to be your agent? Yeah, agent.
Yeah, that's it.
And there, you know, there's like hundreds of agents after these guys. And So when when John got questioned about that, as he did, of course, I remember his line. He goes, listen, I tell him to go to my dentist, too.
Okay,
you know, I tell him to go to my lawyer and I tell him to go to my dentist. So what's your problem?
Yeah. No special treatment here.
Yeah. So
good.
Some of that, maybe less of that goes on, but obviously, you know, you are pre-qualified with Baker and players are pre-qualified. Agents are pre-qualified due to their old clients, due to their current clients.
Yeah.
Happens all the time. Maybe not to the extent we just talked about.
Yeah, I think over the years, as we've gotten further along in this business, I've been a little disappointed that there wasn't more of the just referral type stuff, you know, where guys say, I'm going with you because my teammate recommended you, which to me has always been, to me, that's the most important recommendation we can have or not have. And guys are just like, I thought guys would rely more on that. And I think in recent years, I've seen less and less referral than I used to see.
Yeah.
Where, especially with veterans, where we get a lot of veterans just because their teammate referred them. And the first, and maybe they'd had another agent, and I'd say, well, what happened to you and your other agent? They say, well, he didn't return my phone calls. And I thought, he didn't return your phone calls? No. I thought, well, how basic is that? I mean, it's just just amazing, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, we do that, we return calls.
Yeah. Although when I was with the Packers, I'd have a player come up to me and say, you know, I switched agents, and sometimes it would be a player that wanted a new deal and we weren't in the mood to give him one.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, I would be very honest. I'm like, well, what do you think this agent's going to do for you that the old one didn't? Well, give me a new deal. I'm like, well, that's not going to happen. So if you're doing it because of that, now, if you got other reasons, that's cool. But so sometimes you got to, you know, get some reality checks with players switching.
Exactly. No, but and quite frankly, that's the come on that a lot of guys use.
Yeah.
You know, your agent's not tough enough. He's not taking a hard line. He should be holding you out. You shouldn't be going to training camp without a new contract, all that kind of stuff.
The worst is the Pro Bowl. When they come back from the Pro Bowl, they got all the ideas.
A lot of free advice has been passed out there. Oh, I know. Yeah. I know. That's exactly right.
Well, Jack, we could talk all day.
Oh, we could.
Tell me what am I right? You're 80 years old right now?
I'm 80 now.
How long you can do this?
Yeah, Tom is 50 and I'm 80.
Yeah.
I'm not the retiring type. Mm-hmm. I like to play golf, but not every day. And I still enjoy the relationships and just being involved. And I realistically, if Tom wasn't here, I probably wouldn't be here.
Right.
I can't imagine I could do this by myself right now.
How many clients do you guys have?
I would have to check and see. We had three guys drafted in this draft. I think we've got about 15 or so, something like that. You know, which is a very easy workload for three guys.
Right.
And, and you don't, you know this, you don't need as many as you used to need just to make it work.
Right.
Because the money's so much bigger now.
And when will you get at it with the Browns? You don't even know their mounts yet, right?
Don't know the amounts yet. No, I don't know if they've been determined or not. If they have, they hadn't told us.
Yeah.
But I would guess sometime within the next 3 or 4 weeks. I would guess that they'll be going back for their. I'm guessing they'll have those guys in for a mini camp this week. I think they do have it this week, and then they go back as soon as everybody's classes. Graduated or school's out, however they work that now, for probably most of the month of June.
Right.
And then they'll be off until training camp.
Right.
But I would think signings will be essentially done by the middle of June. I don't know that, but I'm guessing.
Yep.
If people want to sign, they can sign.
Right. Back in the day, we'd wait till
there were
training.
Holdouts.
And I would try to get them done in the summer, and no one would talk to me.
But everybody's afraid they're going to be low. You know,
right.
They don't want to be first, or they don't want to be before the guy in front of them signed,
right.
Or all that stuff. But it's not that game anymore.
Right.
It'd make your job a lot easier if you were doing the contracts now for the club.
Have a real vacation.
Maybe not the veterans, but the rookies are. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Jack. I'm so proud.
Yeah,
I'm so happy that you got this number one. It's a great story how you got him. And call it, what is it, a Big Red O?
The Big Red O was the Mexican restaurant, yeah. I'll definitely go back there if I go to L.A.
I'll put that in the show notes, the Big Red O.
Okay. Yeah, do it. Okay.
Thanks so much.
Okay, good
and
talking to you, Andrew.
Congrats to you. Take care, Jack.
Bye-bye.
And now the part of the podcast where I answer your questions. You can leave a voicemail. Again, the number 484-416-5654. 484-416-5654. I'll answer your questions. I have a couple today to answer. The first is from...
Mr. Andrew Brandt. Grew up in Chester County, Pennsylvania, just down the road from where you are now, and now I'm living out in Seattle. So, huge fan. I listen to every podcast. I have a question for you. And maybe this will shed some light into the way I think, but I'm not a cheater, I promise you. What prevents teams from compensating players outside of the contract in order to sweeten their deal? And the reason why I think of this is because of the whole situation with the Tom Brady and TB12 thing. I mean, you know, it popped into my mind that perhaps the Patriots, you know, can pay him that way so they don't have to pay him as much, you know, under the actual contract. So just curious, something I've always wondered and figured I'd ask you about. Enjoy your show. Hope to hear from you. Thank you.
It's a great question. And again, I didn't have a name. He just started talking. So no name, but great question. Listen, I get asked this all the time, especially when it comes up with Brady. Is there any way that you can pay players outside the cap? Well, you can, but you get in big trouble. And violation of salary cap compliance could cost the team fines and or draft picks. It's a big deal. Teams are vigilant. I'm sorry, the league is vigilant in enforcing the salary cap. It is the pillar of competitive balance in the NFL, so how can you go around it? You can't. What you can give players are two things, cash. That's it. I'm sorry, one thing. You can give them cash through the contract. You know, back in the day before the cap, there were, you know, leases on automobiles and apartments. You know, when sports was just starting up, but now it's very compliant, and cap compliance is a big deal. Now, in relation to Brady, I get asked this all the time. He consistently takes undervalued contracts. Why? We don't know. I think the answers are ridiculous when you hear things like he wants to help out the team, make the team better. Listen, the Patriots never pay above the cap. The Patriots can pay him more. The Patriots have plenty of cap room. It's not his job to be management. It's his job to be a player. So, and then the idea of Giselle and his wife makes so much money, he doesn't need to make a lot of money, as if he would negotiate completely differently with another wife. I don't get that. So why does he? We don't know. As to insinuations that he takes less because he gets money elsewhere, he gets it through his trainer, Guerrero, there's some kind of deal worked out. You know, I think that would be very kind of rampant speculation. We haven't seen evidence of that. But if we do, obviously it would be a major problem with the NFL. Now, the NFL and the Patriots have their history. But we can only surmise that Tom Brady
consistently takes way under market value, not only for top quarterbacks, but we consider him, if not the one of the top two or three top quarterbacks, where these guys are making $28 to $30 million a year, and he's making, I don't know, $15 to $17 million a year. Why he does it, we'll never know. But again, to be clear on this point, the teams cannot pay outside the cap. They can't pay into your business. They can't promise things. They can't have side deals. They can't give you a piece of the team later in a side deal, a wink-wink. You just can't. So I just want to be clear on that. People ask it all the time, and it is a good question. Our next question comes from Eric.
Hey, Andrew. This is Eric McClung, a longtime listener of the podcast. With the draft concluding, I had a question about undrafted players. It seems like a lot of these guys are signing right away, so curious if you have any sort of behind-the-scenes stories from your past days, or maybe just give us a little bit more information, kind of what goes on with getting those players and signing them so quickly. Also, it seems like teams tend to lean and grab some local kids as well, so just interested to hear more information about how these teams seem to scramble at the end and sign these undrafted players. Up to hear my question answered. Thank you.
Yeah, Eric, you will hear your question answered, and I appreciate the question. As I've talked about and written about, the period after the draft is the busiest of the weekend. When you talk about what goes on during the draft, the focus is so much on the top, but it's really the bottom where so much happens. Within an hour after the draft, there are maybe 10 to 15 players per team signed. These are undrafted players. It's recruiting, it's selling, it's a frenzy. It's where teams are on the phone with two or three agents and or players without agents. Agents are on the phone with two or three teams. They have to make career-defining decisions within minutes, if not seconds. So preparation comes in. Agents map out where the best spots are, who didn't draft what opportunities are. Each team tries to sell the fact they've had undrafted players do well in the past. You know, whatever it is, they sell the best undrafted stories they have, and it's this big mosh pit at the end of the draft. I used to try to manage it in Green Bay. You know, we had all these GMs, John Dorsey and Reggie McKenzie and John Schneider, and I would try to corral the money because we were limited on how much we could give out. That would all go towards our rookie pool. We had to pay the drafted players, etc. So it is this frenzied, and it's always been like that. I don't know how we can change it. Three quick stories. I've told them. I tweeted them during the weekend. Save the best for last. The first, I remember signing a guy, gave him a bonus, agreed to terms. He didn't have an agent. And then I look on the list by other teams. He's on another list. And then he's on another list. I think he was on our list, the Eagles, the Cardinals. And I finally called the guy. I said, wait a minute. You're on three lists. He goes, I thought I could. I thought I could sign with three or agree with three and then sign, pick one later. I'm like, no, you pick now. Pick the Cardinals. He lasted about a week. The other story is in the frenzy after the 2003 draft, some scout in the room about an undrafted player just yells out, hey, anyone want to sign this quarterback from Eastern Illinois called Tony Romo? He's from Wisconsin. Crickets. Not a word was spoken. So that's the end of that. And my favorite story about an undrafted player, one that I'll carry to my grave, one of the greatest stories, I tweeted it out, I've got 30,000 likes about this, is this. I once had a player who didn't have an agent. I couldn't give him much, but I just said, listen, we can do a deal for a $500 bonus. And his words to me, I kid you not, a real story. Well, I only have about 100 now, but I can get the rest when I come in there next week. And I said, no, we pay you. I always had a soft spot for that guy. He never made it. He tried, you know, he lasted a couple weeks in camp. But anyway, that's one of the great stories of all time. So that's the undrafted frenzy. Thought I'd give you some insight into that. Again, anytime you want to call, leave a voicemail, I'll answer it on the podcast. 484-416-5654. Really hope you enjoyed that podcast with Jack Mills. Really great stuff. Especially the Patriots, that surprise team trying to get in position somehow, some way. I don't know how they're going to do it. They had 23 and 31, but to get to number two, I just don't know what they were thinking. But clearly enamored, as it sounded like, with Mayfield, as were the Jets, as were the Broncos, and of course the Browns taking him at the top spot in the draft. Really hope you enjoyed it. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew Brandt. Listen to the podcast on iTunes. Give us a good rating if you would on Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you hear your podcast, RossTucker.com. Podcast One, And I'll be back next week with another edition of The Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.
Thanks for listening to The Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also get additional insider insight by listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, Even Money, and College Draft Podcasts, all at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts are found.